Hello, and welcome to Grace Unscripted, where we share stories of the people in and around Grace Church without any script, just real, raw conversations about life change through Jesus. My name is Audrey Wallace, and today's guest is Christy McDonald. Now, she is tied to a couple other Grace Unscripted episodes. So if you've heard Sunny Gressock or John Gressock, we're going to reference them here in this story. But she certainly has a story of her own. And, you know, I really related with her as she talked about so much of her life believing there's a God, but not realizing she could have a loving relationship with Jesus directly. So we have a big conversation about that, and I really love, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but she told us what her superpower is, and I can't wait for you to hear what that is today. Welcome to Unscripted, Christy.
Thank you, Audrey.
I'm excited to have you here. We have known each other for a few years.
Quite
from a
few,
variety
yeah.
of ways.
Right.
We've slept in a cabin together for a weekend. We've
came to your house.
We've been to my house.
Yeah.
We've done retreats, all
right.
kinds of things. But I think most of those things were like with a whole bunch of people, and really never I looked in your eyes and you looked in mine and
right.
I said, tell me your life story. But today's your day.
Okay.
We're going to do it.
We'll try to do it as best as we can.
It'll be beautiful. Okay. So I always like to start at the very beginning, and I want to know what little Christy was like. Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
I grew up in Akron, Ellet area.
Okay.
My childhood, most of my life I lived in Ellet until, I was 5 years old, and then we moved there. But I still kind of was in Ellet,
mm-hmm.
you know, staying at my grandparents' house, our family.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I had a crazy childhood.
Do you have any siblings?
I have... three brothers and
okay.
a sister.
Okay.
I'm the baby.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Like by a lot? Is there a big spread?
It evens out when you
okay.
have five.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, I don't know, there's like an 18-year-old and, oh. and a 2-year-old. Like it can go crazy.
Right. Yeah. But. And my oldest brother, I believe he's 73. He just mm-hmm. had a birthday. He's 73. Mm-hmm. And then it go down from mm-hmm. there. And then I'm 62. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 and 11 years or so. That
yeah. Just
like
each of us
dream.
Were a few years apart.
Perfect.
You
okay.
Know.
So you're the baby. You're
I'm
born
the baby.
Into a family. I heard you say grandparents, multi-generational home. Like, how did that work
well,
for you?
Well, no, not really. So my parents, at one point, for some reason, I don't know because I was small, had to move in with my mother's parents.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up living there. When they passed away, we stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
We lost the house, mm-hmm. apparently, and we had to move to a trailer park for mm-hmm. a little while.
Okay.
And after that, it wasn't very long, my parents got a house in Ellet over by the park, Davenport
mm-hmm.
Park area. And so I lived there the rest of my life.
So that was all before you were five, the changes
yes.
that you were talking
yes.
about when you were really
Those.
Little. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
So a little bit of moving before five, but then once you got to that home, that's where you were raised
right.
the rest of your life. Family
right.
of seven? Is that what you said?
Yes.
You're moving around and
yes.
finding your way, living
yeah.
in a trailer together. That sounds like it was probably
yeah.
complicated.
I a lot of things I didn't remember because I was so young,
mm-hmm.
but I... At six is when I really start remembering a lot of things about my childhood,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there right after we had moved to the next house,
mm-hmm.
I was in a really bad accident,
mm-hmm.
and I was 6 years old, mm-hmm. and they lost me. I died. They brought me back.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Like a car accident?
It was a bicycle accident.
Whoa.
I don't know if you want to hear it or not.
I mean, that sounds traumatic for you, for your mom, for whoever witnessed it.
It was insane. You remember those banana bikes?
Of course. With the big seat, you could have two people on them.
Right, yeah. Well, my sister and I, we both had one. And her friend across the street, we were all going to go on a bike ride. But Kim was her name. She didn't have a bicycle. So my sister said, we're going to go down this big hill that was the next street over.
Mm-hmm.
My sister said, oh, Kim, you can use my bike, you know, and you can ride double with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, okay, because she was a little bit older, and I was 6 years old. And so we're coming down this Wolf Hill in Ellet, And halfway down, my sister yells over to Kim and says, Kim, oh, by the way, there's no brakes.
Oh, my gosh. And you're on this bike with Kim?
Yes.
Oh, no. On the big epic hill of LA.
Right. When you're that small, it's a big hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Kim basically panicked. She said, Christy, you got to jump off. And I'm like, no. You know, I'm like, no, I can't. It's the last thing I remember until I woke up, I opened my eyes, and I thought an angel had me. I mean, there was a white dress and just kind of blurs, you know.
Wow.
And then I got a glimpse of a lot of red on this white dress or whatever it was, you know. So then I was out. Next thing I remember is them, some sirens, and them pushing me in the emergency, and I was on my stomach because I lifted up my head, you know, just like a baby trying to lift their head for the first time, and I seen my father sitting in the waiting room. At least I thought this is how it went for me. At least that's what I thought. And then that was it until it was about 3 weeks later. I was in a crib at Children's Hospital, one of the big cages, because kids that get hurt really bad, so they can't get out, you know, or fall. But I had a brain concussion, fractured skull. They lost me at one point. It took them weeks. They didn't shave my head, but it took them weeks to get all the blood out of my head. So that was really traumatic. Yeah. They never did find my shirt. I went down on my back all the way. So my entire back was just a mess, one big scab, and the back of my head. And, yeah, they never found my shirt.
Never. And Kim?
I don't know about Kim. She was fine.
Oh, my goodness.
My sister was, we were all fine, you know, except me. I mean,
was there long-term impact from that for you?
Yeah, I missed about 6-7 months of first grade.
Yeah.
But they were wonderful back then because, you know, first grade, you really don't, what do you, yeah, color.
You're still learning how to do school here.
You know, and schools were a lot different way back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, so my class, my teacher, everybody was great. You know, they always sent me things. And so as I started to recover and I was in a room at the hospital because I was in there for months, and I just took advantage of it. I mean, I was like getting anything
popsicles,
I want.
Popsicles, ice cream.
You know, my mom had anything you need, you know. And, oh, can I have this? So they'd bring it. And when it was time for me to go home, be discharged, my mother said, all right, honey, what pajamas or what do you want to wear home from the hospital? Well, this is really funny. My sister got a pair of I Dream a Genie pajamas one year for Christmas. And I wanted to wear them. And my sister was so mad.
But you were.
But she had to let me wear them.
Yeah, anything.
And it was just like a little devious thing at 6 months, you know. But so that happened, that whole thing. It was pretty crazy.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
So in your household, so now, like, I mean, again, this is 7 people, 5 kids, so there's a lot to manage there anyways. And now there's one in the hospital and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, my brothers were older, so they, 2 of them were in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
So they weren't there as much. So it was my sister and my youngest brother were there most of the time, because I don't remember my brothers being just coming for a visit.
Yeah.
You know, but still. We had big family functions all the time.
So that's a huge life impact thing. Was this something to think about faith? Was this something your family prayed through? Was there a church community? Did you see God when you were knocked out? Like, what was that like for you from a faith perspective?
Well, my father was an atheist.
Okay.
I wasn't allowed to go to church.
Hmm.
The only kind of church or anything that I had in my life was my father's mother. Her name was Nellie. I just loved her. She would take us on a weekend or something, and she'd sneak us to church, me and my sister.
Oh, wow.
You know, and so that's that's really all. And my mom, she wasn't a Christ follower or anything like that. It was the kind of a special occasion where you'd go to church on a Sunday. But I don't remember hardly ever going to church unless I snuck with a friend or something.
So would this have been something that just was never talked about, never brought up? Or was your dad, like, against it verbally to the point that you heard those things and he was kind of, like, training you up to not believe?
Well, I don't think that was the case. He really used the Lord's name in vain all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, so bad. He was abusive. He, you know, my mother, she stayed with him because of us kids, you know, the whole time. And my mother just, she just stepped away. She didn't argue about anything. And she never talked about God. Nobody did in my family. So I didn't know Jesus. Like when I was in second, third grade, kind of like that, kids would have, or these little women would have Bible studies or Bible classes or something fun for kids. And you'd go to their house, and in the basement, they'd have all these little scriptures that you would learn. So, and I mean, for years I snuck doing that just because it was fun and I didn't have to go home and be afraid, you know? So
it was a place of refuge and of hope and safety, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say safety for sure.
You felt that from those spaces?
Yeah.
This isn't your dad's story, but, like, do you, as you think back, like, can you find any reasons or roots for why that would have been something he was so against?
No. I cannot. I mean, I've tried and tried, but family's just a hard family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that can happen. Okay, so you have some threads to try to follow to get to Jesus, and it sounded like you followed them to the ladies with the basements and
as much as I could as a child.
Right. And then as you continue to grow into your teenage years, is that something you still, you know, tried to pursue on your own, or was that something that you strayed even further from?
I didn't pursue it at all because I didn't know how. I didn't have
no model.
No, I didn't have, except my grandmother, she was, you know, old, and she did not drive, so the only thing that I did was, I believe she died when I was, I want to say 14 or something. She died the same day as Elvis Presley. I remember that.
Oh, that's an easy way to remember it.
August of 77.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's all I had in my life was that. That's it.
Okay. So what were you like as a teenager and as you started to, you know, get towards graduation, and what was your life like?
Teenager. Well, I just rolled with the punches at school. My grades weren't bad. I got into some mechanic stuff. Wood shop. I took all of the untraditional things for a female.
Why do you think that was?
I don't, maybe because of my childhood and how mean my dad was and my, you know, and that kind of thing. I had to learn how to do stuff. And so, but I loved it. I was the first female at Ellett to do any vocational, it was all guys. And at one point, my dad wasn't totally horrible all the time, but there was, he was an alcoholic and an abuser, but he, they would not let me into metal shop. I was in seventh grade. He was fit to be tied. He went to the school, and he says, you tell me where in your rule book that my daughter cannot sign up for this class.
Wow. So he stood for you, and he defended you and protected you.
He did.
Okay.
That's the only time I really remember my father ever doing anything like that for me.
Interesting.
And from that point on, I was able to proceed, you know, as different grades, and then I got into wood tech and all that, diesel mechanics. I didn't like that. It stunk. But out of all of that, I did end up going to school after my kids were all born and stuff for mm-hmm. automotive science.
Wow.
And became a Ford certified mechanic.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that about you.
Yeah.
A Ford certified mechanic. Yeah. Okay. So you jumped from, so let's see, high school, your, what did you think you would do after high school? What were you dreaming and driving towards?
Well, me and my girlfriend, my one girlfriend, her name was, well, I was Rocky, she was Charlie. We'll just put it that way. That was our nicknames.
Okay.
But we were best friends. We did everything together. And so we liked Two Ticket to Paradise song. So when we graduated, we were out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got pregnant at 17.
Okay.
With my first daughter.
Mm.
And so that, she was kind of mad at me. That kind of...
Did that tie you back home? And
Yes.
Okay.
I was going to get married and all that stuff, but that did not work out. A week before the wedding, he just, froze. So then I had to go back home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And was your family accepting, helpful? Did they step into that space alongside of you?
Yes, they did. Once, because they wanted me to get an abortion, and mm-hmm. I couldn't, mm-hmm. because I always loved little kids anyway,
mm-hmm.
and so I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And their friends would say, "You're going to be raising that child," and mm-hmm. and all that, but that didn't happen because I proved them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you started parenting as a 17, 18-year-old and just stepped into a whole new life. And you were expecting a ticket to paradise.
Yes, I was. And I graduated early. Mm. So, I wasn't thinking fat graduating.
Mm.
And But I did graduate with my class. They let me.
Mm.
I mean, I got out of school early in 80, but I graduated 81 with my class with my daughter.
Mm. Wow.
So.
Okay, so that starts a whole new world for you. So now you're a mom.
Yep, and now I'm a mom.
And providing and trying to find a way to mm-hmm. to manage. So how did that, was there any pieces of God in that piece of your story that you could see him?
No.
Either you were avoiding him or going toward him?
No,
or?
There really wasn't.
Mm.
And that hurts my heart to say that.
Mm.
But when I say it, it's like, wow, no,
mm-hmm.
I did not. All that came later mm-hmm. in life in my 20s. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's go there. So you continue to journey on. We have a child, and then you said in your 20s, that's when it did start to come?
Yeah, at least I think so.
Mm.
So I had already had all four of my daughters before I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So I... First, I think I needed to tell you. So I got a phone call. My parents moved to Florida, and my husband and I bought their house. And then that Sonny and Heather's father, he's passed away. But we lived there, and I got a phone call one time, and, oh, my gosh, I don't know. It was summertime, saying that my dad had a heart attack. And I needed to get to Florida. Well, I hated my father.
Mm.
But I did it for my mother.
Mm.
She stayed with my father all these years,
mm-hmm.
From abuse and everything from my dad
mm-hmm.
for us kids.
Mm.
So I needed to be there for her.
Yeah.
So they told us that I got to Florida, jumped on a plane, and went that night. And Jay stayed home with the kids. And I remember going into the hospital, and everybody's all surrounded right there. I mean, got off a plane, went straight to the hospital
mm-hmm.
in Winter Park, Florida.
Hmm.
And my mother and one of my brothers and my sister and a doctor, and everybody was all hugging. And I'm like, oh, no, he's dead. And I went up there, they said that my father had small cell carcinoma, lung and liver cancer, and he had 6 months to live.
Wow.
So that was that. So we ended up moving him back home because there was nothing they could do. He was a really large short man, mean, and I think he got humbled very quickly because there was no, because he wanted his life to be saved. I'm not talking from Jesus, right. but he didn't want to die.
Yeah,
I think he was too mean. He didn't want to die. So, but he ended up with doing radiation and all that stuff, and it just destroyed him. Mm-hmm. I watched the man get down to less than 100 pounds.
Oh, my word.
And I think we moved him into my brother's home in Norton. It was a farm. And he started getting so bad that he was in the bed all the time, and we administered everything. All of us took shifts. Mm. And like I said before, it was for my mother.
Right, to care for this man that was
right.
so harmful.
My brothers were my father's idols. I mean, they were his boys. It's like he did not care about the girls. Mm. So we took shifts. He was on like 250 milligrams of morphine, a lot, and it got to the point, well, my father wouldn't even eat for anybody but me, which was so crazy.
Where's that coming from?
Yeah, I was, and I'm like, well, I got to do it. So I was there a lot feeding my father, and he never really said anything to me, but he asked me one night, he said, when you come back, could you bring me a nightlight? And I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, I will. Well, my brothers were in the room with him. Nobody ever left the room. We just took our shifts. And they were in there. And I went home after 3 days. And I just wanted to shower and, I mean, all that, just see my kids. Mm-hmm. And so I went home, and Jay, my husband at the time, he built us a swinging bed from, you know, it was great. He was a carpenter.
Whoa, like in the magazines.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. So I remember it was maybe 2 a.m, and I get home and go to bed, and I wake up an hour and a half later, and I said, I got to go back. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, my dad needs a nightlight. I have to go back. Why? I'm thinking, why did I think?
Yeah, why the urgency?
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay. He said, you want me to drive you? I said, no, I'm fine. And so I took a shower, another shower. I got one when I got home, and then an hour and a half, but just to wake me up. And so I grabbed a nightlight, and I'm coming down the steps, and we had this round, I'm sure, you know, antique tables with the glass top and the feet that come out. It was my grandmother's, my father's mother. It was her table, and that table had the Holy Bible on it, as long as I can remember, but nobody ever touched it. So I walked past that table, and I stopped at my tracks. I hope I don't get emotional because I don't know why this happened. Well, I do now. Mm-hmm. But I turned around and I grabbed that Bible.
A nightlight and a Bible. In the middle of the night, awoken on a mission.
And I drove back. And when I got into the room, my brothers, head to head on a little couch, sound asleep. I don't know why it bothered me so bad. Because I didn't sleep. And I said, hey, you guys, get up. I'm back. What are you doing here? I said, just go on. Go to bed. I'm here. I had to bring Dad a nightlight. So they went to bed. Well, wake us if you need us or anything like that. And I said, okay, which I knew I wasn't going to because something was stirring. I can't explain it. Nothing. I don't know. Why did he need a nightlight? Why did I grab that Bible? So I was sitting there, and he started breathing funny. And I start, and why I thought this, all these things, I don't know why I'm thinking them. I see I must have seen it in a movie, almost this or that. So I started counting in between each breath. Mm-hmm. And they were getting longer and longer in between. And then I stood up and I went and I felt his feet. And they were cold. Mm. So I know my father's dying now. Mm. And this is from movies. You know, people, they get cold when they die and stuff. So even though I'm in my 20s, I don't know anything about.
Yeah, there's not a nurse there, like, giving you signs or anything. No, we did everything. You just noticed yourself. Yeah. Okay.
So I didn't want to wake my mom or anything. I sat back down in the chair. And my heart started to, like, really pump fast and skip a beat and stuff like that. I opened up that Bible to the 23rd Psalm and read it.
Really? Like, you didn't know to go to the 23rd Psalm? That's just where
I heard of it.
You heard of it. Okay.
You know, Psalm because it's a pretty popular.
Sure. It's like John 3:16. But
right, exactly.
Psalms, yeah.
So those were like the only two things I knew. Mm. I couldn't recite the 23rd Psalm. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I opened the Bible to that page and I read it to my dad.
Out loud?
Yes.
Okay.
And that was it. I didn't know how to pray or anything. So I stood up again and felt, and he was getting colder now. He's up to his knees and that. So I just started idle chit-chat talking to him. You know, it's okay, Dad, you can go. I think that my father, well, I'll finish this real quick and then I'll tell you that. So he eventually took his last breath. That was it.
That night with you?
With me. Nobody in the room. And I, sorry. So he passed and I went over to him, kissed him on the head and said, I forgive you.
Mm. That's hard.
Yeah. That was tough.
You were drawn there for that. There's that still small moment that you could share with him. That's like the most painful yet precious at the same time, privileged even, moment that you can be with someone to experience something like that with them.
Yeah, it was something. So I went and I woke up my mom, and I said, Mom, Dad's gone. And she got up, and everybody was so angry with me.
For not telling them when you saw signs?
Yeah, or not waking anybody. I mean, I was in there with him for a few minutes before I, you know, got my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And so got past that, but I could feel the tension. And then, you know, everybody stood around my dad and talked to him and said things and stuff. And so the coroner had come at like 6 in the morning or something. So after that I left. And on my drive home, I want to talk about it. I just kept thinking of every step that happened and why I was there.
Mm.
Just to forgive my father.
Mm-hmm. Right, and not because he said he was sorry either.
Right.
But because God called you to that moment, whether even you realized it or not. You kept saying, I don't know why. Something was stirring. I don't know why. Yeah. And like you said, now that as you look back on it, it's clear.
So yeah, the drive home, I just felt it had to be God.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be.
Did you have much faith at that time?
No.
This was in your 20s, you said?
Yeah, no, I really didn't. Mm-hmm. Jay and I and the girls really didn't start going to church until, you know, like after that.
Mm-hmm.
So
what do you do with that thought? You said, I had to have been God. Then what?
I nothing really. I went home and then, you know, we did our, what you needed to do.
Yeah.
And I just really didn't think, I didn't have time to think about it in that depth.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, it wasn't until, Jay and I hadn't had Sonny, and Heather yet. So my two girls from previous marriage, we, so we went to breakfast at Bob Biggs Boy that following morning, or so it was a Friday, I believe, my father passed. Okay. Sunday, we went to Bob's Big Boy on Talmadge Circle, and we're having breakfast, and I had to use the bathroom, so I went to the bathroom. I'm going to be upset if I start crying again. It's just another thing.
Yeah.
It's, so I walked into the bathroom. There's this beautiful younger lady. She was a little bit older than me, but not much. I mean, she probably in her 30s. She had four teeny tiny kids in that bathroom.
My gosh.
They were all dressed in their Sunday best. And she, I just listened to her with those kids. She was amazing. So gentle and patient, kind and loving. And I had to say something. I'm like, how do you do it with four?
And you have two, and you just can't even imagine.
And she said, the good Lord.
She pointed up to heaven.
Yes, she did. And I said, that's amazing.
Wow.
So we just talked a little bit in the bathroom. And she says, how would you like to go to a Bible study?
Get out of town.
I'm not kidding.
A lady in the Bob Evans, or Bob Big Boy bathroom with four kids in tow invited you to a Bible study.
Yep.
Wow.
And at that moment, I had to say yes because it was so coincidental of how everything was falling that I knew I had to. So it was a Wednesday. It was a Wednesday Bible study. And I went, and I ended up, and, you know, I liked it. I don't remember a whole lot about it. But I would go every Wednesday. And then she invited, and I liked it. You know, it was nice to open up the Bible because I knew nothing, and it was still was so confusing to me. And nobody, you know, was like trying to, what do I want to say? They weren't pushy people. I guess they, maybe they just assumed I knew something about Christ. So it was a little tough, and I think I was too embarrassed to ask stuff. So she invited me on a retreat. And it was at a church. And it was just for like 2 days. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go. So I went and listened to everybody's story and all that. And so she's up there speaking, and then she says, she brought a friend today, and she told them how we met and stuff. And she said, and I was hoping that I could get her to come up here and share her story.
She, on the spot like that, called
you up. I could not do it. I couldn't get any words out because my father just died. I just got home. It was crazy. I had all these different thoughts of these steps that were happening anyway. And I, well, no, I mean, it was later on. It was like still like a year because I was going to the Bible studies and stuff like that. But I'm still thinking, no, I don't think I can do that. I don't think I can. And I think I might have briefly just said a couple of things, you know, but I did not share my story. I couldn't. I didn't know how. And, you know, I cried for years about that, about everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you, would you say you had accepted Jesus as your Savior at that point? Like, you knew enough, had you learned enough yet to really even know what that meant?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, I knew in my heart I felt there was a God, but I never was asked if I...
Personal relationship with Jesus.
I never had one, so...
I think there's a difference there that, at least in my experience in growing up, believing in God was the question, do you believe in God?
Right, yeah.
But I didn't know to ask the question of myself or anyone, do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and that he can be your personal Savior? I wasn't aware of that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was told to me. I was just a kid, and I didn't really grasp it, really. So that's interesting that you're saying that you just don't even quite know yet at that point. But there was maturing happening. There was desire, and God was stirring
right.
in very creative ways.
And I didn't like, I wasn't around people that really went to church because I didn't go. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know many people except Diane was her name. And I didn't know things to ask. I just was kind of like, you know, the person in the back seat taking it all in.
So you're in your 20s. Did that transform your life, or were there other dips and dives within your journey?
I got sick in 87, 3 months after my father died. I was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And they said I'd never have children again, you know, be it. So, it was 5 years later. Here comes Sunny.
Wow. So, against all odds kind of thing.
Yeah. I wasn't supposed to have any more kids. And then I was able to have Heather. So, I mean.
So you healed from cancer? Did you go through?
Oh, yes. They had to take a lot of things. And that's why they said I wouldn't be able to have any more children. Mm-hmm. But I've had so many, probably 18 or 19 surgeries for things, and I shouldn't even be here. I should
miracles
not.
Miracles upon miracles on that ride, it sounds like.
One of the things that had happened to me was a cause from my accident when I was six, and that just happened in 2014.
Really? Still having...
The doctors always told me I had cysts because I would get these horrible, horrible pains all the time. And, you have cysts on your ovaries, or, you know, and I wait till they rupture or whatever. Well, I was working in 2014. Now I'm married to Michael, my husband now, over here across from the offices at the Infocision.
Oh, yeah.
I was their chef.
Okay.
So one day I ate a carrot. You know, I was making some vegetable tray and stuff and ate a little baby carrot. It was like an hour later, I was on the floor. I had to crawl to the office, and there was a snowstorm, and I'm like, I think I need to go to the hospital.
Whoa.
So they took me to a medic center down on 18th there, and they got me in a room. My boss was, she was so nervous for me. She was scared because I was pale white. I was in so much pain. I couldn't walk, hardly nothing. So she got me in there, and they took me back in a room and assessed me and said, okay, we'll be right back. Yeah, they lied. Here comes an ambulance to take me to the emergency hospital. Whoa. You know? Yeah. So a long story short there, I ended up having a blockage from that carrot in my intestines. Wow. So, all right, I'm through that. 7 days in the hospital. Not even 6 months later, I'm at home and I'm fighting everything. My husband's like, you need to go to the hospital. I'm like, no. So for about 12 hours, I made myself suffer until I knew I was going to die, and went to the hospital, and the doctor said they wanted to do that whole NG tube thing, and I'm like, no, I can't do that again. You can put me out and do it. Oh, we don't do that. And I said, well, then you're not doing anything. No, I'm not doing it. The first time was horrible. You know, Heather, my other daughter, was in the room when she was freaking out. It was like, I don't know if you ever had one of those, but they are horrible. There's got to be another way. So the surgeon comes into my room then, and he's like, so, Miss McKinney, I hear that you are refusing treatment. And I said, no, I want you to help me. By this time, my stomach's like this big.
Oh my gosh.
Huge. People probably thought I was pregnant, you know. And I said, no, I just can't deal with that, that NG thing in my nose and throat. And he said, okay. He said, I have a surgery, and I'll be out in a half hour, and then we'll come and get you, and I'll take you and see what's going on. So he told my husband, 45 minutes tops. Yeah, 9 hours later.
Oh, my.
they had to take my small intestines. They had to take them out, and what do you have, 32 feet, I believe, of the smaller intestines. And 17 foot of that they took out, and there was 15 kinks.
Oh, my gosh.
And it just twisted and twisted, I guess. And he said, I don't understand, when it was all over and he came to see me, he said, and he was telling me this, he said, were you in an accident recently or anything? And I'm like, no, not recently.
Oh, my gosh.
50 years ago.
Wow.
And he said, that's what it is. And I told him that, he said, well, tell me about it. So I did, and I told him about the bike mm-hmm. accident and stuff. And he said, yeah, your intestines have been twisting and twisting and twisting. And I didn't have a cyst on my ovaries. That's what it was the whole time.
Oh, my gosh. That makes me just feel sick to think about. That's crazy, though.
It was horrible.
So you've said your words like, oh, I shouldn't even be alive. Like, there's so
many.
He
said that. Yeah. He said that to me, too, the surgeon. He said, you should not even be on this earth right now. Okay. I don't know how you have survived all these years.
So how do you put that into practice? How do you take that and run? And were at that point, were you a follower of Jesus?
No.
Okay.
No, it was a couple years later. That was in 14. So Sonny and John moved up here in 15. I believe it was 15 or 14, somewhere in there. And then they started coming to Grace. Mm-hmm. And then I eventually came to Grace. So that's how things then started there. But isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Well, yeah, there's numbers of things in here that, I don't know, you could look to and ask questions as to why. And in our sermons, you've heard Jeff say or advise us not to ask why, but to ask what. What can God mm-hmm. do with this versus like why or woe is me or anything, but like how can God use this and what am I meant to do with this to further the kingdom? So if you look at those things with that question mark, what do you see?
Well, I know he obviously had to have a plan for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, if I wasn't here, look, Sonny wouldn't be here. John mm-hmm. would be here. My kids, nothing. Mm-hmm. You just think about all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
everything good that's happened mm-hmm. in life. One person, how they can make a difference, you know, just by life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
So how did your life start to transform? You mentioned when Sonny and John moved up here, which if you haven't yet, dear listeners, you can listen to both Sonny and John on this podcast. Some of the all-time favorites of our listeners and highest listening numbers and things like that, because they are definitely dynamic stories in and of themselves. And I love listening to the two of them because they intertwine, but also are completely, you know, their own journeys as well. And so it sounds like your puzzle piece fits into that as well.
Yeah.
So their lives transformed, and that was something that they drew you into as well. How did that happen?
It was a little rocky start. My husband is a non-believer, so just so people know. So it was a struggle for me in the beginning because he made things difficult. He knows that, you know. Now, but Sonny and John, I mean, everybody thought they were in a cult. I'm just going to say, and I'm like, you guys are crazy. They're trying to, you know, learn about God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a cult. Well, you know, people see a big church and stuff, and I just, so it was just kind of a little funny joke that my husband would say. And then Sonny, you know, they invited me to start coming here with them or come at Christmas time once, and I did. And, you know, so then I just started coming, and it wasn't until 2016, is when I accepted Jesus Christ. I was here, and there, Jeff did a sermon, and then there was a song, come to the Father, or run to the Father, and I lost it. And I said, I'll be right back, Sonny.
Oh, wow.
And I came to the went to the bathroom, and I'm like, dang, what? It just overwhelmed me.
Flooded, yeah.
And I knew that it was different.
Whoa.
I knew something was different. Mm-hmm. And then when I straightened myself, you know, back out and went, sat down, and Sonny's mm-hmm. like, yeah, he got you, didn't he? Mm-hmm. She said, Mom, that was the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, she took me to Jeff after that and stuff. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, it's changed me so much. It really has, just little steps and mm-hmm. learning and listening to Jeff and mm-hmm. thinking, wow, yeah, mm-hmm. I need this.
Mm-hmm. When, for anybody listening that might not know, we keep referencing John and Sonny as though everybody who knows who they are. No, not at all. I just was thinking, if you don't know, John is the pastor of our middle school ministry. Yes. A very, very divine appointment for anyone to be in charge of a middle school ministry. I have middle schoolers. I know what that sacrifice is, but he does it brilliantly, and he's definitely gifted toward it. And then Sunny is, gosh, I can't even rattle off her title because it is
about 17 words.
It's such a long one, but director of community and missional living and all the adult groups and discipleship here at Grace. So they're deeply intertwined into the fabric of Grace and everything that happens here. So even though back then they would have been definitely participants, maybe part-time employees, and maybe not even yet called into Grace College, where they both ended up getting degrees and becoming part of our pastoral team here.
Yeah, but I don't believe that they were. I think they were just coming mm-hmm. and stuff like that, you mm-hmm. know.
But figuring out their own way right, at the same time. Right. You're figuring out yours and fighting through adversity and anything else that might have tried to pull you away, because that's what our enemy prefers to do, is to distract us, divide us, and
I know that now,
us.
Audrey. Yeah. That's for sure. I mean, he's definitely... And the thing, before Grace and before I came here, all my girls, I had them dedicated. We went to a little church in Ellet, and the pastor's name was Jeff.
Oh, really?
He spoke right to me. Only me in the whole place. Okay, all the time, every week. So my husband and I, we ended up getting baptized, and we had all four girls dedicated. And I don't even think that they remember that happened. I believe they don't. So he left. Jeff ended up leaving and moving, and
the pastor of this other church,
yes,
in Ellet.
Okay. Pastor of the other church. And it was over for me. I was just, what am I going to do? Well, what am I going to do? Now, this was the church with the choir, the little church, you know. Mm-hmm. It was boring sometimes, but not when he spoke. He was really good at mm-hmm. his sermons. And, so I was lost again.
This was before you jumped back in time. Is
yeah,
that true?
I'm sorry.
So no, that's fine. I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
I was trying to stay on track and try to get things so they lined up just right. But
that would have been when you were in your 30s then.
Yes.
With the other church.
Yes.
And so your girls were young, mm-hmm. dedications, and mm-hmm. you're on a pathway and even baptized, you said. I heard that choice. But you don't.
They asked, you know, they asked if I believed.
Mm-hmm. But
here's the thing, Audrey. I said yes because I felt, I believe there's a God. Mm-hmm. But when you one day realize that you can have a relationship with Jesus mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. learn all these wonderful things, mm-hmm. how loving and kind and what a father, you know, mm-hmm. that you have, mm-hmm. that it changes. I never changed up until I started coming here. Mm-hmm. Even though I went to church a little bit, you know, as my kids mm-hmm. Were growing up, I didn't change anything about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's easy, you know, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not so easy when mm-hmm. when you have a relationship with Jesus and you realize what you have to do.
You're right, in following Jesus.
And
there's so many language shifts. They're subtle,
but
they're important. Like, I like to ask the question, maybe a friend's dating a new guy. Instead of saying, is he a Christian, does he follow Jesus? Is he a Christ follower?
Right.
Because there's a difference there.
Yes.
And I don't think that it's always as obvious. Even in our own lives, we might say, right. Again, I believe in God. Yes. My answer to that question is yes. Am I a Christian? My answer to that question is yes. If I, you know, in you in those days, or like I already shared me in my childhood, if somebody said, you know, do you believe that Jesus is your savior? I would have said,
what's that mean?
Come again?
Yeah.
Exactly. Or like being saved, born again. Yeah. I'd never heard any of these words, or at least I shouldn't say that, but I didn't digest them or understand them. So I hear what you're saying. And I think there's a lot of layers of maturing that you can have within your faith, even if this answer you hear the question at your baptism, you know, do you believe? Yes, I do. And then this reckoning with the Holy Spirit overrun to the Father that night at grace. Like, yes, Jesus called you deeper. Which, you know, if somebody asked you, when were you saved? Do you have an answer to that question?
What would I say?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
If somebody were to ask you, when were you saved? Do you know the answer to that question?
Sorry.
It's a little bit of a trick question. I'm curious what you would say about it.
It is a trick question. I feel like that would have been it. And because I felt like I was, but to be very honest, mm-hmm. it was crazy that night because so many emotions. I may have been asked that question, and I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I really don't, which mm-hmm. that's embarrassing, but I don't. But I feel that, yeah, everything came over me then. Mm-hmm. I had it in me. I was hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I was hungry for Jesus.
Something changed.
Yeah. And it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Because.
And I want to take back my statement of it's a trick question. It's not a trick question. It's a tricky question or a complicated question because there is always something new to find in Jesus. You didn't arrive. Yeah. It's not an arrival,
right.
Which sometimes it could feel like if you're saying, oh, I was saved then, and then, you know, then everything was fixed and perfect and I was clean. Yeah. That's not the case. You know, we should constantly be pursuing the next moment during the worship song that God wrecks your heart again and you learn something new and you're born again into a new layer of knowledge, a new depth of understanding. So that's okay that you had this time when you were baptized and you had an understanding you know, if you think of a kid who learns, you know, something scientific in kindergarten, but then learns it again in sixth grade and then learns it again as a high school student and then in college, like that's kind of, you know, you came to know him more deeply. So I don't know. It's something I reflect on a lot when I hear people's stories is that there's always going to be a deepening and, you know, that all those moments were true for you and for your faith journey, that God was working with you and in you.
Yeah, I know that for a fact. And, you know, I tell people a lot of times if they're like doing something and they have children, you know, you have to be the one to break the cycle. Like, you know, my dad, he was abusive and I swore I would never, not to my kids, you know, you got to break the cycle. I'm the one in the family that broke the cycle out of five kids. Mm. So breaking that cycle, God is definitely working in me. Mm-hmm. I had no reason not to believe. But I, like, you know, just learning how I really wasn't discipled, so I just kind of did it on my own. And mm-hmm. and then getting involved in Grace here and doing, you know, with the Power Kids and things, just volunteering a lot and stuff, I kind of ran out of time. It felt like a little bit. So I decided I had another surgery in October. I don't know if you knew that, but I had spinal surgery.
Oh my.
So I had to take a break from here and for a while. So actually, it hasn't been that long since I've been coming back. I did go to the last retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So I really need to focus. I'm going to still volunteer a couple times a month. And because I miss the kids, and I need to focus on Jesus and get in the Word more, because there's so much more that I need.
Mm. Yeah, more depths.
You know, I really do. When I was baptized here at Christmas time, because I was always asked, are you, you know, take baptism classes and that, and I'm thinking, why? I've already been baptized. Mm-hmm. I still didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just decided that day I was going to do it, and mm-hmm. nobody knew it but me, mm-hmm. and I went up mm-hmm. there to do it. So that was more of a feeling like, yes, I knew prior to this last year that I was saved and I'm okay, right. But I still have to, I don't have much more to change. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I have changed so much that the one thing that I know that Jesus is with me is because I have this unbelievable power of forgiveness now. Mm. I mean, I can forgive so easily. It's amazing.
I'm just imagining that.
I just call it my superpower now.
Yeah.
You know, so many people that have wronged me, and I've done to people too, but mm-hmm. forgiveness is, it's a life changer.
Well, that sounds like an amazing superpower.
It is a life changer.
I've never heard anybody say when asked, if you could have one superpower, that's always like reading minds, flying, time travel, but forgiveness.
Yeah.
I'm adding that to my list.
It just takes the hate and everything out of your heart.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It takes so much away because that person doesn't have the power over you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you hold all that in and you don't forgive, mm-hmm. they still have power
mm-hmm.
over you. That's what makes you angry, and that's what makes you want to, you know, wring their neck or whatever mm-hmm. it is you want to do, is because mm-hmm. you haven't forgiven that person.
Yeah, it's an infection in your attempt to heal. It doesn't
let you. I love it. I love my new superpower.
That's amazing. How do you think you acquired that superpower?
Oh, why do you think? I think it was probably Jesus Christ.
Well, I know that, but did he? Was there like another moment? Was there like did he speak to you? Or?
Well, yeah, Jeff had done some sermons on forgiveness and the life of, you know, some life changing moments for me that I then would dig in about, and I can't read a lot, not that I can't read, because I fall asleep. Mm-hmm. I fall asleep. Mm-hmm. So I watch stuff. Mm-hmm. So I watch all kinds of sermons.
Bible Project stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like now I'm watching The Chosen. Ugh, and yes. Let me tell you what.
Don't, spoilers, no spoilers
I'm
for season 5.
I'm not going to say a word. I'm not through it yet.
I mean, I've read the book, so I know it's going to happen, but.
But it's like, you just, you know, even though they have some things that are, like, not fiction, they have to add some things in.
The story.
But right. The main, wow. Mm. So I love it. If I can't read it, then I'm going to have to just really dig into some good
consume
scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that, and like The Chosen. But yeah, that I think that's through all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I always am like Googling forgiveness, always. I'm just mm-hmm. always want to find out all the reasons, what it does to you, mm-hmm. why you should have forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you have like a verse or like a
memory
verse?
I don't. I can't quote
verse?
Nothing.
That is, and I don't. I hear your nothings, and I call you out on that, and I say, don't speak those words over you. Haven't yet. I haven't
okay,
yet
yes.
gotten into reading. I haven't yet gotten into memory.
Yeah.
But don't say can't.
Yes.
Don't say never. Careful what you speak over
That's
yourself.
Right.
The Lord can do anything. All that
I
said,
I have not yet learned any scripture of
for memory, and I'm telling you, it is a gift. There are people that are anointed to have that, and I watch it happen, and the effort put in is still great, even if it doesn't last forever. But the Lord can capture certain things in your heart and soul to give you that. So I pray that for you, is that he can capture a scripture that you can memorize. Hey, listen, just tattoo it on your arm. There's a whole bunch of people here who have been doing that.
I put all the tattoos on that Jeff says, you know, I need to get a tattoo of this.
I have
them all over.
For sure. but for forgiveness, I love that you're studying that, that you're Googling it, that you're looking for ways that it's coming up in your life and opportunities to do so, and therefore showing others what that looks like as well, because I'm sure they're seeing your radical forgiveness, and they're thinking, okay, if she kissed the head of her father upon, and he didn't even say, I'm sorry, I'm guessing, but you were able to forgive him. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that shows me something and reveals a piece of my own heart that I can step into based on your story.
I feel like that whole scenario with my father when he wanted me to bring him a nightlight, and he would only eat for me. Mm-hmm. I keep saying, that was him asking me to forgive him. He couldn't talk. Mm. This is what I'm telling myself. And
Searching for meaning in turn,
I believe my father saved me.
Say more about that.
Because of how all that transpired, me hating him my entire life, not my entire life, but young life, and what he went through and how I changed. So from my father passing to meeting Diane in the bathroom, you know, coming to grace and just different things, my father saved me. Mm-hmm. If I wouldn't have been there, I don't know if I would have had those feelings.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that goes back to the question we said earlier, rather than saying why, did this happen with my dad? Why did it... What can God do with it? You just answered that. What can God do with it? He can save you with this life, this story, this wounded person who harmed. And it's not a why question, it's a what. And he's shown you.
So people that have loved ones that pass away, don't be angry with God. You know, if something happens suddenly, or don't be angry with God. I can say this now.
Sure.
Back then, I couldn't because, I mean, it didn't matter to me then that my father died because I still hated him. But I think it was that hate was being pulled out slowly by slowly, you know. And I just think people just want people. I want people to know that God does do things for reasons. Mm-hmm. He, you know, the death of a loved one, look what it brought for me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, I mean, but I didn't love my father. That's different. I guess, but it's not. It changed me. And if it was a loved one, why? Why question God? Because look at all the good that's happened in my life now.
And search for that. Search for the goodness in the darkness, the hidden treasures in darkness.
That's right.
Because he is the lamp to find that. He's not going to be a lamp to the woe is me, but he will be a lamp to hope and to healing and to forgiveness in those dark places.
Yeah, so I think that's what I would have to say to someone.
I love that. A message of forgiveness. And, you know, when you see someone who forgives in circumstances like that, it helps. It helps all of us. Like the listeners, it helps me to know that that's possible. Like you maybe would have said at some point, I can't ever forgive my dad.
Exactly.
You might have spoken that.
Oh, I know I did. I will never forgive him. Mm. You know, everything that he put our family through.
Yeah, well, here you are.
Never forgive
superpower
him.
Now.
And superpower hit me. And
the Holy Spirit.
That's right.
And it's like Jesus' power. It's like supernatural power is what we're talking about here, just to be clear. It's it's God in you. It's Christ
it
in
is.
You.
It definitely is God in me, and I love it. And I just really keep trying to do better. Mm.
Yeah, and just be with him, spend that time with him. Well, I'm curious to hear, I might make a prediction, but I might be wrong, about what song you'd like to add to our unscripted playlist. For those who are listening, if you've never heard before, we have a unscripted playlist on Spotify. So if you're looking for some good worship music, the worship music that's tethered to every heart that has been on this podcast since we've been doing this part, Sonny and John, I wasn't doing it yet, so I'll have to backtrack and get their songs to add to the list. I'm very curious to hear what that would be. But it's a wonderful mix of a whole bunch of different souls and different perspectives and in mirrors reflecting back on their story. So we like to say something that reflects your journey or just one that's touched you in a special way. What song would you like to add to
our playlist? I will tell you, but can I say one thing first?
That of course.
Sonny asked me if I would say on the air, tell my sister Charissa that I'm the favorite. I told her, I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say you're all my favorites.
Well, isn't it Sonny that says she's God's favorite, but it's all of us that could say that, isn't it her? I don't know. Somebody around here does that. So,
but yeah, so there you go, Sonny. But the song I chose is Proof.
Okay, tell me about Proof.
By Seth Addison.
Did you say Seth?
Yes.
Addison?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if I know this one.
It's an amazing song. And when you listen to it, which I'm sure you will, mm-hmm. it's a lot of it about my life that just when I heard the song, I cried for days.
Wow.
How God pulled me through, you know, and this is the proof, you know, the things that I've done and just, you have to hear it. I don't want to give it away, but.
You don't want to sing it for us?
Sure. Let me get my voice ready.
I thought you were going to be serious.
It's a beautiful song. Wow. And if it doesn't bring a tear to somebody's eye, because I think everybody probably has something in that song that it would touch on, you know?
Sounds like the Bible.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, and it's, you know, addiction or whatever is in there. It's really good. I sent it to someone that goes here, and that was recently married, and he was driving in his car, and he said, "Oh, I got it." He said, "But I can't." You know, I'm driving, so I'll do it later. Well, then he, it was a half hour later, he texted me back and said, oh, my gosh, I'm crying in my car.
Wow.
Yeah, because I thought of him with that song, and I just thought, it's amazing.
Well, all right, we're going to leave this story here today with a challenge, and that challenge for our listeners is going to be to look up that song.
Yes.
And to ask God to show you somebody who it could speak to. Maybe they're a believer, maybe they're not a believer. I haven't even heard this song, but I feel like this could be a good practice to say, just listen. And this is what we can do when we read scripture. We can do the same thing. When we hear a sermon, we can do the same thing. Listen. Listen to God's voice on this. Is there somebody, I don't even need to know why. So many things you said here. I don't know why. I don't know why I needed the nightlight. I don't know why I grabbed that Bible.
Right.
But listen to that song, listen for a name, and then share it with them and see what God does.
That's a really good idea, Audrey.
See if he draws out the tears.
Challenge.
See if he makes a connection of some form. But
I bet it will. Get some responses on that.
All right. If it happens, I don't know how you could drop us a note, but actually I do know how you can drop us a note. We have an email address, guys. You can write to us unscripted@graceohio.org. Love to hear from folks about ways that stories have touched them, questions they might have, needs you might have. If you want to hear more from Christy, you want to connect with her, she's covered a lot of things here. If you want to talk forgiveness, I have a feeling, girl, we get together with you and talk about forgiveness and work through some things like that with you. We can get you connected.
Great, because it's an amazing thing.
Superpower. We're going to get that tattooed on one arm and then some memory verses on the other. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good idea.
I love it. Well, if you're here at Grace and you see a lady with tattoos all over her forearms, then ask her if her name's Christy and tell her you heard her story. Thanks so much for sharing with us today.
Thanks, Audrey. It was great.